Secondly, I wanted to let you know, many of you saw my announcement that went out late yesterday that says we are live streaming essentially this worship service as an experiment to see how that goes for anyone who is feeling that they need to stay home today. And so thanks to Jonathan Daisy up there in the balcony. And to let you know, we're going to try to mute the microphone during Joys and Sorrows so that we're not broadcasting that. But just be aware that if that doesn't work out, your joys and sorrows may be broadcasted to a small off-site audience as well. And then lastly, I wanted to say that we're encouraging a little bit more of social distancing here at FBC this week. So I'm not doing handshakes at the end of the service, for example. Instead, I want to offer you a few options. You can elbow bump. You can do an awkward sort of wave. You can do jazz hands if you're really excited. If you want to show your geeky cred, you can do live long and prosper. If you want to give a little bit of more spiritual greeting, you can do a sort of prayerful bow and nod. And you can do a Mork and Mindy, Nanu Nanu, if you remember the 70s. And also, let's see, what was the other one? Oh, yes. If you want to show your love, you can show a heart. And be creative. If there's something else you want to do to show a greeting, you're welcome to. Jolene. Good morning. Our words to call us to worship this morning are by Jason Cook. We are seekers on a quest to discover truth and meaning. Sometimes we think we've found it, wrapped up, glimmering with newness, straight off the intellectual assembly line. All the answers right here for us and others, if only they'd listen. But truth has a way of coming in disguise, sometimes wearing rags and sometimes finery, and so often cloaked from our immediate sight. And sometimes that which we have rejected, that which we have let go of or decided was only for others, but not for us, can be our teacher. Let our time of worship be an acknowledgement of the never-ending journey towards truth and meaning, and our appreciation of those we learn from along the way. Lighting our chalice this morning, Marcia Rice. No, Susie. Yes, come on up. I had the wrong order of service over here from last week still. Let me put that down there so I don't look at it again. Susie's one of our lay ministers, and thank you for lighting our chalice this morning. These words are by Julian Lepp. We seek our place in the world and the answers to our heart's deep questions. As we seek, may our hearts be open to unexpected answers. May the light of our chalice remind us that this is a community of warmth, of wisdom, and of welcoming multiple truths. And now I want to invite Michelle Cote, our Director of Religious Education, to share a message for all ages.
Good morning.
I didn't hear everyone. Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, that was so much better. So today Cindy's going to be speaking about wisdom, and she's referencing some women in wisdom. And so I thought I'd tell you a story about Athena. And does anyone who is a kid, not an adult, know who Athena was? Any youth know who Athena was? What do you think? She is indeed a goddess, a Greek goddess. What? Yes, exactly. She was the goddess of wisdom, and that's why I'm using her in a story today. Now, no one knows for sure if this is true, but it could have been. Once, a long, long time ago, the first king of Athens, King Cecrops, and I'm not sure I'm saying his name right, who was part man and part snake, wanted to find a god or goddess who would be the protector of his new beautiful city. Two gods came forward to be the city's protector, Athena, the goddess of wisdom, and Poseidon, the god of the sea. They almost fought over it, and just as they were about to attack each other, Athena, being the goddess of wisdom, suggested that they should have a contest for the city. With King Cecrops as the judge, they set up the contest and that decided whoever gave the best gift to the city would win. Athena wandered to the nearby forest to do some deep thinking. As she was the goddess of wisdom, and therefore she knew she would be expected to come up with a gift that would really please the people. She couldn't disappoint them. She could not lose this magnificent city to Poseidon, but she just didn't know what gift would be worthy. She knew Poseidon, god of the sea, was powerful and would probably produce a great gift for the people. So she continued to worry. As she sat on a tree stump, pondering, she heard a sound in a nearby tree. She looked up and saw an owl perched in the tree. She looked at the owl, and it looked at her, and she recognized that this owl was also filled with wisdom. She gathered some berries and offered them to the owl. He swooped down and took the berries, and Athena spoke to it. She said, "Wise one, I need to find a gift that I can present to the members of the city." The owl flew off, and a few minutes later came back and placed a small branch from an olive tree in Athena's hands. She knew in her wisdom that this was the gift she needed to present to the city. With the owl by her side, Athena rushed to the city, filled with the knowledge that the owl had chosen well. A huge crowd of people had gathered with King Cecrops as the judge, and they went up to the Acropolis to present their gifts to the city. Poseidon went first. He lifted his massive trident, which is a three-pointed spear, and struck the earth with it. Where the spear struck the ground, a spring of water gushed out of the rock. The people loved it, but as they went closer to taste the water, they discovered it was salty. Don't forget that Poseidon was ruler of the sea, and water he controlled was salty, just like the seas he ruled. Then it was Athena's turn. She quietly knelt on the rock ground and buried something. Everyone watched. Everyone was silent. Then a brilliant green shoot began to grow out of the rock. It grew and grew, and branches and leaves appeared. It was a full-grown olive tree, beautiful with silver-green leaves and plump purple olives. The crowd gasped. This turned out to be a much more useful gift. It gave the people of the city not only the olives themselves as food, but also the olive oil for their lamps and for cooking their food. As well as they knew, as more trees grew from this one, that they could use the wood from the trees to build their boats and houses. King Cecrops declared Athena the winner of the contest and the protector of the city, which became known as Athens, or in Greek, Athena. Athena was filled with joy that she was to protect the city. She turned to look at the owl and thought how lucky she was to have found another being that was filled with wisdom and willing to share it with others. She knew then that the owl must be the wisest of all animals. Just as she was the goddess of wisdom, this owl must be the animal of wisdom. She decided from that day onward, the owl would be her sacred animal and would never leave her side. So that's one story of woman and wisdom, and Cindy will share more.
Some words to lead us into a time of individual prayer or meditation titled Labyrinth by Leslie Takahashi. Walk the maze within your heart. Guide your steps into its questioning curves. This labyrinth is a puzzle leading you deeper into your own truths. Listen in the twists and turns. Listen in the openness within all searching. Listen, a wisdom within you calls to a wisdom beyond you. And in that dialogue lies peace. Blessed be. Amen. Our reading today is by Joyce Rupp, who is an author and poet, author of several books on Sophia and spiritual wisdom. And this is a poem titled, My Journey to Wisdom. Once upon a time, a child of happiness danced upon the land, knew friendship with the earth, and celebrated life with her love of solitude and simple things. She grew into a young woman whose vision of self was clouded, clothed with the complexities of insecurity and the necessity of leaving the hallowed womb of the quiet earth. She walked into cities of strangers, straining her inner eye to catch the slightest hint of the beauty that had energized her younger days when she played upon the earth. Days stretched into months, and then years went by. She slowly changed by going deeper, deeper into her center, never understanding why the desire to go deeper was there, but always knowing that there was no other choice than to follow at all costs. Darkness often loomed up large against her searching journey. Risk and truth became her companions. She met compassion, and then wisdom came to greet her. So close at times were these companions that she wept for their intensity and her unworthiness. Still, they walked with her, And everywhere she went, her companions reached out and blessed the people of her life. She could only kneel in gratitude, offering her heart of praise to the divine companion who had faithfully kept the kindling of love burning in her heart. Thus ends the reading. This month, we share our plate with the UU Mass Action Organization, which is our Unitarian Universalist statewide lobbying organization that works with members of congregations and congregations as wholes to do the work of Unitarian Universalist values in the state of Massachusetts, including focusing particularly on such things as immigration reform, prison reform, health care, and what was the other one I said this morning? What? Climate change, yes, among many others of our values that they uphold and advocate for in justice work and advocacy lobbying here in the state. So for their good work and for the good work of this congregation, that we might advance our goals and continue on the path of spreading love and warmth and truth and the bright light of justice into the community as a whole, we will now gratefully receive the morning offering. But Mike is going to say a word about why this anthem this week. Yes.
So the anthem that we're singing this week is from a musical called Into the Woods by Stephen Sondheim. And in 2 weeks from today, the choir is going to present a Music Sunday service featuring a lot more music from that musical. It's a very interesting service that we're putting together. And the musical itself, how many people are familiar with it? There was a movie recently, and it's been around for a while now. So the musical itself deals with a lot of themes around growing up, about childhood, about coming of age, about dealing as a community with big problems that approach us, including one that is sometimes interpreted as mass disease. So a very relevant show that comes up all the time. And so the choir is going to sing a number of pieces from that show, as well as some solos from people in our choir, or duets from people in our choir. So it'll be a fun Music Sunday service, and Cindy and I will stitch together parts of the plot with some reflections on the main topics and how we think about them in life. So we hope that you'll come join us for that service. It's also, the musical is being done at Open Door Theater coming up at the end of March and the beginning of April. So if you're an Into the Woods fan, you have a chance to see it in a few different locations. So this is Children Will Listen from Into the Woods.
Our children, careful about the things.
First, a statement about these uncertain times we live in right now. This is a time of high anxiety. Some folks were already particularly stressed out this week over presidential primary elections and what the shifting landscape will mean for the future of our country, particularly for those people who are experiencing extreme hardship and need, who need desperately for things fundamentally to change, such as asylum-seeking immigrants, trans people, people of color, people dealing with poverty or medical conditions, people who care about the future of this planet. And then we have also the fears about the coronavirus, the fears about contracting it, which connect to our own fears of our own health and immune systems and our strengths and our weaknesses, and about the fears of loved ones contracting it, fears also about what will happen if our society goes into extended widespread quarantine. Will we have enough food, water, and electricity? What will happen if our society begins to fall apart? Are we on the verge of a dystopian nightmare? Breathe. Pause. Shake it off. And I mean literally shake it off. I learned this week that traumatized animals like rabbits after an encounter with a predator will shake, and that this is a way of releasing those stress hormones. So shake it off, as Taylor Swift says. Pause and breathe. Now, you may recall that I am a dystopia expert. I'm joking, of course, but not really. I am someone who has studied dystopian novels and films and television and written a very long paper on them and attended a whole conference on dystopia. So that's expert enough. And I'm here to tell you, I don't believe that this is the apocalypse. We are not about to start the Hunger Games. You will not be divided into factions. Now, what may happen may look like something we haven't seen before, and it may be difficult. But we have a secret weapon for navigating this uncertain future, and that is religious community. We are bound together through an inescapable network of mutuality, as Martin Luther King once said. And so if we get to a point in our area where we need to quarantine ourselves and stay at home, we will find ways to virtually connect, to reach out, to check in, to keep the web of community strong and support one another in all the ways that we are able. And so, on with the sermon. In these uncertain times, we often turn to expert opinion. For example, for several days, in fact, for the whole last week, I waited anxiously for the UUA to release its statement on coronavirus, certain that there would be some wisdom in there that helped me to know, helped me to navigate what to do in congregational life. When that statement finally came on Friday, you know what? There was not a thing in there I didn't already know. Not a thing. And this is not to say that we shouldn't listen to expert opinions about certain things. If they tell you hand washing is important, it is. But I also want to say something that I, as a woman, sometimes need to remind myself of, which is trust your gut. Trust your own experience and knowledge, and stay calm and listen to that still small voice within, that inner voice of wisdom. Expert opinion is something we need to listen to, but it is not the only thing we need to listen to in this or in anything else. And there are many types of wisdom. So there's expert opinion and book learning. This is, in this example, medical and disease experts. There's common sense wisdom, things you just know already, like don't lick the doorknobs. You knew that, right? You got that. And then there is the things that you know deep in your bones, like knowing you're okay, you got this, people are generally good, the arc of the universe bends towards justice, love wins over all. This is a spiritual wisdom, a wisdom that connects to your empathy, to your compassion, a wisdom that connects you to that which leads you towards wholeness. This is the wisdom that tells you when things get rough, seek community in the ways that you can. Reach out in ways that are safe. Build connections whenever possible. This is the wisdom that tells you that life is big, that love is strong, and that the arc of the universe, as I said, does bend towards justice. You might call this wisdom intuition, something that women are often credited with, but which all of us have. I'm going to call this wisdom Sophia. And I do so with the caveat that this may seem biased and binary, because in choosing to talk about wisdom in a feminine voice with feminine pronouns, I do not mean to imply that this type of wisdom is inherently female or only accessible to women. The point here really is to distinguish between two different types of knowing, and I'm using pronouns and gendered language to make that distinction. But I choose to call this wisdom Sophia because Sophia does mean wisdom, and the ancient goddess of Sophia in the Bible is someone who I've often and long time found an intriguing figure. So Sophia is the goddess of wisdom in the Hebrew Bible, the Hebrew scriptures, and in the Christian scriptures as well. And I was surprised when I first learned that there's a goddess in the Bible. I did know logically that when God declares in the Ten Commandments, "I am the Lord your God, you shall have no other gods before me," that this was implying that there were other gods that you shouldn't listen to. But and those gods are referred to a lot in the Bible, the ones that are the false gods according to the one God. The Jewish people are forever being berated by their prophets for worshiping these gods. We hear about Baal, for instance, in 1 Kings, which says, he erected, talking about Jeroboam, an altar for Baal in the house of Baal, which he built in Samaria. And Ahab also built a sacred pole. Ahab did more to provoke the anger of the Lord, the God of Israel, than all the kings who were before him. Now, sacred poles, building them and erecting them is a big no-no in the Hebrew scriptures. And I was surprised to find out that they're a symbol of another goddess, of Asherah. A surprise because I always assumed a sacred pole would be a male god symbol. But Sophia wisdom is different. Sophia wisdom is different from these other gods and goddesses in the Bible because she's not one who's decried, not one whom we're warned against, but rather someone who's upheld. She's someone who sits by the hand of God. So, for example, Proverbs 8 begins with wisdom. Sophia calling out saying, "The Lord created me at the beginning of his work, the first of his acts of long ago. Ages ago, I was set up at the first, before the beginning of the earth. When there were no depths, I was brought forth. When there were no springs abounding with water. Before the mountains had been shaped, before the hills, I was brought forth. When he marked out the foundations of the earth, I was beside him like a master worker, and I was his daily delight, rejoicing before him always." Notice how it says Sophia, wisdom, was with God in the beginning. She was there at the dawn of creation. She is the ancient mother, the goddess that was in so many cultures of the region at that time. Now, in order to make Judaism and Christianity not polytheistic, I would argue, and also not quaternarian instead of trinitarian, Sophia is usually explained away later on as a metaphor, an aspect of God, but not really part of God, not one of the Trinity, just this sort of metaphor for God. And then when we get into the Christian scriptures, she's even more mansplained away. In the Gospel of John, chapter 1, we get this. "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him. And without him, not one thing came into being. And what has come into being in him was life, and the life was the light of all people." What has happened? Sophia, goddess, has become Logos, God. And we shall see that Logos, the Word who was with God, becomes the Word made flesh through Jesus, the Son of God. The text erases Sophia. We have taken an ancient goddess tradition and changed it to proclaim it to be another male god. And this god doesn't sit beside the god Yahweh, but this god is part of the god Yahweh. The ancient mother becomes the eternal son. Now, there's a whole lot more that we could say about Sophiology, about the Hagia Sophia. We could trace her through Jesus' words or through Gnostic texts and see that she was never really gone. We could talk about different periods and places in Christian history where she was more present. We could talk about her connection with Mariology or with the Holy Spirit. All of these would be fascinating to pursue, and I invite you to do so through research and books, and I'm happy to recommend some if you're interested, because it's fascinating stuff. But what I want to do is return now to that idea of different ways of experiencing knowledge or wisdom, and different ways of knowing, using Sophia as our image of this kind of wisdom we want to explore. As author Joyce Rupp says, we need Sophia more now than ever. We need her compassionate presence and her ability to help us see clearly in the midst of a world that cries out for wisdom and for love. So I'll tell you an example of when I experienced the goddess of wisdom. This is really an example broken into two vignettes. Before I got pregnant with my daughter, I was walking in Row Camp, which is our UU camp in Western Massachusetts. And I stopped, and I put my hands against a tree all of a sudden. And humanist agnostic though I am, I said a prayer to God. I prayed that I hoped I would be able to get pregnant and have a child. And when I finished that prayer, I took a couple of steps, and suddenly I fell to the ground as if someone had pushed me. And I don't know if I tripped or what. I don't know what happened, but I said to myself, well, I don't know what the answer was, but I think that was the goddess. Now, cut forward a few months. I was pregnant, and I was full of anxiety. My mother had had a stillborn child at 9 months when I was about 10 years old. My sister just stopped living one day in the womb, a couple of days after her due date. Her name was Faye. And I was so afraid when I was pregnant, so very afraid that this would happen to me. The presence of my sister Faye sat with me daily as an ever-present anxiety, fear, concern. I didn't give voice to it that often, but it was always with me. And then one day, for a condition I had in my pregnancy, I was referred to a particular clinic. And I walked in. I didn't know what doctor I would be seeing, but I went in, and the doctor came in and introduced herself to me, and it was Dr. Faye. And I knew. All of a sudden, I just knew. I knew I was going to be okay. And my fear and my anxiety, it just fizzled away. That was Sophia wisdom. Gut instinct wisdom for me. That was that moment of knowing and trusting myself that I was going to be okay. So I did need expert opinion. I needed the opinion of Dr. Faye and the things that she was going to tell me to do to keep healthy throughout my pregnancy. And of course, we do need expert opinion right now. We're all looking for logos, the definitive word, the word from the UUA or the CDC that will give us the answer. Logos is that principle of reason, of order, and of judgment. Right now in the chaotic world, we need that logos. But we need balance in our lives too. While we need to listen to the logos of social distancing and stopping handshakes, we need to listen to the wisdom of Sophia too, whether it comes to you in the form of a goddess or the form of the still small voice within or just your gut and intuition. So taking that current example of the virus as an example, let's look at the different sources of knowledge we need. While we need to listen to the logos of keeping a social distance, Sophia wisdom is the wisdom that tells us we also need throughout this to connect on a human basic level. And so we'll find Zoom groups, or we'll touch base through social media, or we'll phone friends, but we'll find ways to keep in contact. While the Logos experts tell us to worry about hygiene, and we should, we also need to listen to that inner voice that tells us also about love and about the inherent goodness of people, and that says not to be afraid of eating Chinese food or Italian food, not to fear the stranger, because the stranger is no less than the person you know to be a danger to you, and no more than the person you know to be a danger to you. While experts tell us not to worry about this because only a small percentage of people will really have trouble, Sophia Wisdom reminds us to check in on those people who are most at risk, the elderly and the sick, and to care for them. So we must listen with our minds, but we must listen too with our hearts. We must balance the logical wisdom and the spiritual wisdom. As the theologian Thomas Merton wrote to the environmental scientist Rachel Carson, he said, "Technics and wisdom are not by any means opposed. On the contrary, the duty of our age, the vocation of modern man, is to unite them in a supreme humility, which will result in a totally self-forgetful creativity and service." So, let us go forward this week, listening to our still small voice within, in creativity and in service. It is an unknown future we face, but with community, with wisdom, with compassion, with justice, we will face it together. May it be so. These words of benediction come from Elaine Gallagher-Gehrman. Walk softly, speak truthfully, love gently, breathe deeply, live wisely, go in peace.